Before we get too far into it, I know some of you may be acquainted with me and with the recording process through the network-produced audiobooks on Bard program, which I'm happy to report is doing remarkably well. I'd like to provide just a quick update going in before I move on to magazines. Seems like only yesterday when that DBC pilot took shape, that was about 4.5 years ago, and I recall in those early planning stages, it felt a little bit like the journey of 1,000 miles at first. But fast forward to the present day, we now have, I believe, around 40 libraries certified to contribute to Bard. And in combination, those 40 libraries, and more coming online all the time, incidentally, but those 40 libraries now, as of this morning at about 7 a.m. when I checked on Bard Mobile, have contributed 3,581 DBC books on Bard. Yes, give yourself remarkable progress, with more being added on a very regular basis. And on behalf of NLS, and especially Paula Bamani, Philip Carbo, and myself, who work on the whole intake process and education process for the DBC pilot, we'd really thank you. It is a remarkable accomplishment. We hope you keep the books coming. I often say there's never been a better time for libraries to showcase their volunteer recording program, and it is great to see that so many of you are doing just that. And if my time with you today inspires some more sharing of your work, then all the better. I'm going to focus today on audio magazines, and I want to let you know right up front that a detailed outline of my work will be made available next week on the wiki. Some of it's strategically redacted, but just the key points today. So what makes magazines so special? What makes magazines so worthy of ambitious goal setting for your program? Well, there are many reasons. My four basic ideas that come to mind. And I thought, this is ripe for another acronym. We don't have nearly enough of those in our work environment these days. That acronym, if you'll forgive me, is DD. D-E-D-E. Define your library's identity better with magazines. DD. Yeah, D-E-D-E. Day-day in the Spanish. Expand your audience's efforts. Expand your studio's efforts. I'm sorry. Define your library's identity. E, expand your audience. D, disrupt the usual production routine with magazines. Maximize teamwork potential through the magazines. And the final E, energize your volunteers like never before. Define, expand, disrupt, energize. Magazines can help with that. More than anything, I'm hoping that just to get the wheels turning with a few of you today, perhaps inspire you to think about volunteer-produced magazines for your program. If you don't currently have a recording program, please know ample support is in place for it through NLS, and I hope you consider launching one. If you do have a studio and you record only books, I hope you'll mull over the idea of adding at least one magazine to the mix. If you're already recording magazines, I hope I can teach you something new, and maybe I'll learn something new from you today as well. If you have a chance for some discussion at the end, that'd be great. If you don't have a studio and you never intend to get one, maybe a few of you can discreetly follow the Comey hearings and update us later. And a couple popcorn makers as well, maybe. Sorry, stay apolitical. if you leave here today retaining two or three key things, I'll be very happy. Got the next 35, 40 minutes with you, and I hope to wrap up a little early again to prompt some discussion, questions, and shared experiences from you guys. Appreciate that. So, moving right along, what's so great about magazines? I've got a few, on an administrative level, a few incentives to consider. Magazines can help establish brand identity. And by brand, I mean your state library, your studio, some combination of these. Has your program ever considered a signature title that showcases or better defines your state or region? Examples of these off the top of my head include Arizona Highways, Michigan History, which Betsy records over in Lansing, Missouri Conservationist, have you heard of that, Richard? Southern Living, Texas Monthly, there's just a few examples that help define the recording programs in the state. What about establishing a strong link to a more widely known national title, more of a household name type thing? Those can attract and maintain attention on their own right. National Geographic Traveler and Smithsonian are clearly signature titles for Insight for the Blind in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, under the umbrella of the Florida State Library. Likewise, Cowboys and Indians remains the primary identifier for the Oklahoma State Library's recording program. Another incentive for magazines, the potential to offer wider reach, more ongoing engagement. And regardless of publishing schedule, magazines offer more steady patron traffic. They have that potential. They can gradually build visibility and recognition for your recording group as a result. Over time, magazine readership can gradually snowball, especially if you're creating a dependably professional sounding product. Even some of the best buzzed about books in audio format are naturally going to enjoy a surge in readership along with a real positive review cycle, or perhaps their release as a major motion picture. And downloads are going to, you know, as many of you have experienced, a real rush for certain books. Magazines that have developed a loyal following over time may enjoy a few hundred hits with each issue. And this is being optimistic here, but I think realistic too, as more folks get used to accessing magazines through Bard Mobile and also the MOC program, Magazines on Cartridge program, become more comfortable with the bookshelf function, we anticipate a gradual build in readership that way as well. There is still that learning curve with the new technology and some of the new functions. There's also the benefits of back issues to consider. Once you've been producing a signature title for a while, you can consider that a growing treasure trove that may be a tipping point for someone considering a subscription. If you look at some of the NLS-produced titles like American History, Asimov Science Fiction, Consumer Reports, National Geographic Traveler, or Poetry, those titles, they're legacy titles, possess more of a timeless appeal. Several years' worth of back issues available for download, again, may be a tipping point for someone considering a subscription. Another incentive, demographic opportunities. There are opportunities to pick something that scratches the itch, perhaps, for an underserved demographic. NLS currently records 48 magazines under contract with three different professional studios. Add to that 12 network-produced QA magazines that I deal with on a regular basis through five different studios. And you've got, exactly right at the moment, 60 magazines in NLS format on Bard. Now, I realize a number of you and others outside the room also are producing magazines in NLS format, but taking everything in combination, we're probably still under 100 total magazine titles. Think of how many are actually published. Think about the ocean of opportunity to expand on that. So, quick summary of those things. A magazine can help highlight your state's identity through a signature title, and producing anything that keeps patrons coming back on a steady basis is a very noble goal. Reaching an underserved demographic, necessary, appreciated. Developing titles that open new doors to entertainment and timely, useful information can help broaden choice. Showcasing an impressive collection of back issues, also very rewarding. But what's one of the very best things about producing a magazine on a group local level? It's that they demand a group effort. By their very nature, magazines can play directly to the strengths and diversity of your volunteer team. Magazines have the potential to call upon a wide range of skill sets: planners, proofreaders, researchers, narrators, monitors, reviewers, digital audio editors, and more. As you discover the unique strengths and expertise of your volunteers, some natural fits may emerge. Now let's get down the trenches for a few minutes and talk about energizing your volunteers and some tips also for high quality magazines. The benefits for your volunteer team. Now we know with producing a book usually involves a duo or trio, quartet, quintet of people involved in the book for its duration. A magazine, on the other hand, can involve the full orchestra, particularly a more involved monthly magazine. And like a symphonic piece, audio magazines have their various diverse parts performed by many players. Some of the performers are going to be first chair, some are not, but all of them can contribute something to the finished piece. Especially when the conductor, that would be studio director or coordinator, keeps an eye on everyone's role in the full composition. Another advantage for your volunteer team in terms of production is, like motion pictures, magazines can be produced out of sequence. They can be produced based on who's available and when. It's especially helpful when dealing with volunteers that have irregular schedules or just pop by whenever they have a little bit of time and want to contribute something. Another motion picture similarity, recording out of sequence allows you to play to the strengths of your team via more appropriate casting. Speaking of casting, wouldn't it be great to assign all those weird detailed food articles with crazy recipe ingredients to your resident foodies? Does your volunteer roster include a green thumb? Someone who might sound really convincing singing the virtues of adding dianthus, nasturtiums, tuberous begonias to an edible meal. Or Do you have any volunteers that have lived abroad or have some degree in a language other than boring old American English? Is there a doctor in the house? What about a know-it-all engineer? They can all contribute to the mix. We often think about casting as to pertaining only to narrators, but it really extends far beyond that. Here are three essential team functions that work with a variety of studio roles. There's pagination, which in a broad sense is preparation, the pre-reading, research, notation of the print copies before the recording team takes them in. Volunteers can be, certain ones can be dedicated to only that. And of course, there's the primary recording, the heavy lifting we're more accustomed to involving the narrator and monitor, and also corrections with the reviewer. The in-house review process and final mastering, that whole quality control component, the final editing, the DTB creation, also requires a unique set of skills. I'd like to provide an example of a studio. It's actually Brevard Association for the Blind, Brevard Association for the Advancement of the Blind. They're located in Melbourne, Florida. They were a program that had mixed luck doing just exclusively books in past years. Then around a decade ago, they moved almost not exclusively to magazines. They still do the occasional book, but they moved to magazines for the very reason that they can engage more people. They have about 30 volunteers cycling through their program regularly, and in the past, it was a challenge to keep them all busy. But now, if the studio's primary focus on magazines, that's just no longer a problem. Once BAB, that's their acronym, Brevard Association for the Advancement of the Blind, once BAB met Dee Dee, everybody's a lot happier and a lot busier. So let's talk a little bit more about those studio roles. And you know, as Mark mentioned earlier, there is certainly that the perception, rightfully so, of narration being the carrot, the role that people aspire to once they've mastered other studio roles. Once a person gains that experience as a monitor and reviewer, it can help make them a better narrator. And in that light, magazines do provide a great training ground for new talent, offering opportunities to develop good habits and sharper attention to detail ahead of the actual hands-on recording duties. So coming in the door, it does make a lot of sense to start out some new volunteers in exclusively the reviewer role. Those duties acclimate them with the full production workflow. Some folks may be a little bit daunted when they see this, and they may even bow out of your program, and that's okay, because the volunteer orientation process can be a good vetting process as well. But thankfully, most new recruits get excited when they see the entire recording process, and they tend to stick around. So the humble audio reviewer job can develop a few key skill sets. It gets volunteers familiar with the subject matter and the overall voice of the magazine. It teaches newer recruits about the building blocks of good audio quality and continuity. And with magazines especially, they'll be encountering potentially a real variety of voices, because you can have multiple narrators on a magazine. Multiple voices, multiple recording teams, and their techniques. So the reviewer to help identify their strengths and weaknesses. And best of all, reviewer role can help instill an overall sense of pickiness that can carry over into the monitor and narrator roles that come next. So let's talk about the monitor. Once you're promoted to a monitor, a lot of new opportunities emerge. This is a crucial role that not only burnishes one's technical skills, it also helps to develop a better sense of empathy for what the narrator does. Diplomacy and coaching skills become honed, especially since magazines can have you working with a whole range of different narrators, within a relatively short time frame, too. As a monitor, you're doing your best to seamlessly run the technical side of the recording session while maintaining a supportive vibe with the narrator. Pivotal monitor role can have a few key skill sets and help develop those. By overseeing live recording sessions, volunteer monitors become more confident and efficient as sound engineers. Since you're directing the recording session, you're helping set the tone and pace of the workflow. You're setting and maintaining good volume levels for the narrator, cueing and capturing each moment of the session, punching in corrected material on the fly, and above all, you're listening with a discerning ear and offering praise and encouragement and requesting touch-ups and redos as needed. In effect, you're learning to coach the narrator to be the best version of his or herself. Finally, the carrot we spoke of, the narrator. From magazines, narration offers a lot of opportunity to hone a few key skill sets, particularly just gradual chunks of on-mic experience, because with shorter projects, articles versus books, newer narrators can experience the story arc, if there is one. For smaller chunks of material, articles tend to range 5 minutes to 35 minutes. Magazine work can also help to build vocal endurance for longer projects. Magazine work for narrators can also help them develop their tools of expression, since they may be juggling a pretty wide variety of subject matter in a short period of time. They can expand their interpretive and navigational skill sets required for the dynamics of longer, more complex materials, longer magazine articles or books. So it's a good training ground. So a quick recap of those roles. With reviewer experience, volunteer reviewers become more familiar with the subject matter, learn the importance of good research habits. They polish their ear for good quality and continuity, develop a sense of pickiness regarding the transposition of print to text. Monitors, the more technical side of things. With experience, they gain hands-on recording software experience, develop a sense of the technical demands of a recording session. They learn how to keep things flowing smoothly and productively for a typical 3-hour recording session. And perhaps best of all, they get to practice diplomacy and coaching skills, how best to give and receive constructive criticism. Narrators, in turn, become the voice of your program, the voice of your books, your magazines. They can help build patron loyalty. Magazines offer a chance for more experienced narrators to polish their chops while assisting with shorter, time-sensitive assignments. Experienced narrators can come in and also have a chance to build mentoring relationships with newer talent. They can use their past experience as a reviewer or monitor to help guide the newer folks that are still learning those roles. And of course, narrators who've graduated up the ladder through those other roles can backtrack at any time and fill in as a reviewer or monitor as the need arises. So you see, magazines can activate a greater variety of really diverse talent while working with a greater variety of subject matter. They're great teaching grounds since the lessons come in smaller chunks. Time spent in all studio roles can help to elevate everyone's performance. Your volunteers can gain an enhanced sense of pickiness, more technical expertise, greater empathy and diplomacy with each other, plus the discovery of their own voice. So moving along and venturing a little deeper into the production process, let's talk a little bit about planning and production. And to paint a more vivid picture, I want to describe the logistics behind a recent issue of Southern Living magazine. Now, don't be scared when you hear this, because it's one of our more labor-intensive titles. The recent spring double issue that I reviewed contains 140 pages of text. It's a Southern Living, which translated to 3 hours and 5 minutes of completed audio. And the resulting DTB has the typical two levels of navigation in this case, with a very generous number of nav points. And to paint a picture of the timeline for this issue, it arrived at the studio in mid-March, underwent pagination and preparation for about a week, which involved a mix of staff and volunteers, but mainly staff members. It entered actual production and stayed there for the better part of 4 weeks. So the multiple narrator monitor teams, the review process as well, and ongoing refinements. The final editing and DTB creation involved two people, took a couple of days once the main audio was recorded. And after so about a total of about 6 weeks in the volunteer studio environment, it came my way in Cincinnati for review, was eventually passed, went to NLS QA, who give it the final blessing, automated validation, and mounting to Bard. Once it's on Bard, the mock program can also pick from it. So ultimately, this well-orchestrated magazine, well-orchestrated effort for Southern Living, involved 23 unique volunteers, and two staff members as well. There were 11 different narrators. There were 8 different monitors, 5 of whom also narrated, and then 10 different reviewers, only one of whom narrated. So you can see the real mix of roles is a little crossover, but a lot of unique roles emerging for this one issue of a magazine. So speaking of the selection of titles, when you're considering production, the first things first, admittedly, Southern Living is something of a hybrid sensation in that it is a regional magazine. It's recorded in South Florida, but it also enjoys wide national appeal. And as I touched on earlier, the choice of title may be informed by your library's mission or the resources available. And so first, digging in a little bit more about considering a truly local magazine, such a title might prove to be a perfect match for your state library and its mission. Reflections from Central Florida, Oklahoma Today, those just off the top of my head, do a great job of providing historical perspectives, personality profiles, local event coverage. Back issues of local interest magazines can provide a solid historical or cultural perspective for readers, possibly students, that a lot of people may find helpful. In a nutshell, Recording a local interest title could be of real value to patrons in your service area who may otherwise go without. And looking at a marquee name, more wide interest title, they may be of wider interest to your volunteers and spur more participation. If you've got a large and restless team, perhaps a more complex title like Southern Living could fit the bill and keep a lot of folks occupied. Of course, it doesn't have to be a big, complex title, and sometimes a shorter, more compact national title may be a better fit, especially if resources are more scarce. A good example of that is the bimonthly Humpty Dumpty magazine recorded for Florida. Each issue is 20 to 25 minutes long, and it is a duo of one narrator, one monitor that typically do every issue. It's a good way to dip your toe in the water if you're thinking about getting into magazines, take on something about that size, a little larger. Comparably, also, another duo effort, and I'm going to take a second to brag about them, is Kiplinger's Retirement Report, which just 2 weeks ago was accepted into the QA program. You'll be seeing that on Bard soon. It's recorded at the State Library in Florida and Daytona. Another single narrator, single monitor team. They actually have two narrators that can contribute, but one of them, Gail Sunderland, is typically doing all the issues. Each issue of Kiplinger's, it's monthly, each issue is about 90 minutes long. More complex subject matter than Humpty Dumpty, but they've got a really great team doing it. So smaller resources, smaller program, you can still hammer out a really terrific national interest magazine. But whatever the size and scope, the more recognizable title can also serve as a really practical talking point, perhaps when it's coming up to firming up state budget allocations or a fundraising effort for your friends group or for satellite studios or something. And once you've selected a title, it pays to get really familiar with its idiosyncrasies. And that's where the role of pagination slash preparation comes into play. And what do I mean by pagination? Because in a broad sense, it can mean several things. Typically, it's the sequence of numbers assigned to pages in a book or periodical. But when it comes to preparing a print issue of a magazine, we suggest paginating the key elements of the article itself, numbering them. Also providing two copies of the print issue. So if you're going to take on a magazine, subscribe to two, one for the narrator, one for the monitor, unless you want to photocopy a lot. Pagination itself, the preparation phase, is a great team activity. It's a bit like fleshing out a screenplay, really. You've got the script in front of you, and you're adding more instruction for the narrator and monitor to follow, creating new vector points as they navigate through the print edition. What should be excluded? Candidates include some time-sensitive listings, some contests and calendar items, visually dependent pieces, photo essays lacking standalone text, different puzzles, things of that nature. And when preparing the print copy, some studios actually staple together non-article content so that no advertising or intentionally excluded items are accidentally recorded. And by the way, a little sidebar here, the reason that no advertising is included is it violates, and Steve Prine could flesh this out more, it's a postmaster rule. So you can't circulate for free through our means any advertising. So that's the primary reason it's excluded. Plus, I don't think people really want to hear a lot of ads. So getting back to pagination and preparation, it also helps to establish a standardized approach to the magazine as a whole. You're seeking to eliminate any ambiguity about the intended flow and ensure that complementary items in articles are inserted at the appropriate time. And we know, Man 17 magazine is a great example of this, that some print layouts are very busy looking and require a bit of extra effort and pagination to suss out what's really going to happen and make sense of things. In the big picture, you're looking at prioritizing the print page, numbering items in their order of appearance. So a more standard approach, of course, be number one, the headline, number two, an introductory blurb or subheadline, number three, the author, number four, the reading time, unique to NLS format. And then we recommend a couple of beats, 2 seconds or so before the body of the article. You would number this, the first sentence to guide the narrator's eye. And if they're accompanying, for example, a captioned how-to list or photo captions, number when exactly they should appear in relation to the body of the article. Be sure to incorporate those secondary items in terms of numbers. They may actually be more useful placed within the article or immediately after it, whichever is more useful. In most but not all cases, photo captions do follow an article, but in some cases, the text accompanying a photo caption might be most useful mid-article. So bear things like that in mind when paginating. Another really key item of high importance, and a number of studios do this, maybe some of yours, is to put together pronunciation guides. carefully pre-read and highlight every potential pitfall and pratfall in an article, and put together a word list, ideally in order of appearance, and phonetically spell out, look up and phonetically spell out every potentially problematic word. So every narrator, monitor, every team has access to the same information. Share it liberally with your teams. One studio I work with updates their own magazine word list. They keep it a continually growing one as a Google spreadsheet and Google Drive and share it. Anyone in, among their volunteers and staff have access to it to update it on a steady basis. Word lists are also very helpful for narration rehearsal once people have entered a recording session. You know, getting familiar with a few really tricky words, Joan Miró, Montepulciano, poulet à champignon à la crème. I had to rehearse those 6 or 7 times before doing this today. So have them right there in the booth, and you know, before going on mic and recording it for real really helps develop that comfort level. How does it feel to say those things? With a word list right there, stapled into a magazine right ahead of the article, it's a very helpful trick. It's also important for monitors, again, to have their own photocopy of the word list, because if the narrator accidentally stumbles or skims over something, the monitor can request a correction right on the spot. So hopefully, this underscores the importance of magazine pagination, the vital prep work that helps facilitate a much smoother recording experience. You can imagine the unique skill sets and focus involved with this work. As for some volunteers, this sort of work, this detail work, might be their passion. Let's delve a little deeper into things and talk about the actual recording. And here are some common sense tips for recording magazines that have drawn from some of your peers. There are no particular order of appearance. They're all pretty important. But the lead-off thing I've got here is to maintain clear studio log sheets. With magazines, it's especially important. One suggestion I have I've seen work really well is one page with a column, of course, the article title. And I thought this is very innovative. The next column, the temporary file name that incorporates the page range, narrator name, and if you have more than one studio, the studio number. So for example, and then 2 more columns, one that has the monitor name and the reviewer name. So article title, temporary file name, monitor, reviewer, all in one line, and then the entire chronology of the magazine laid out on one page. For example, one entry may be, and this is from National Geographic Traveler, off-season Cape Town, article name, the temporary file name, PP106-112, pages 106 to 112, underscore Joan Cother, the narrator name, underscore 5. That's the temporary file name. That's pretty innovative. It has a lot of information packed right into that. The monitor for this article was Al Kalson. The reviewer was Nina Baeza. So when someone else possibly is coming back and assembling this magazine, someone who had nothing to do with the recording, it gives them a lot of information. Here are the articles in order. Here are the page ranges to fall back on. And then when I get a copy of the QA magazines, I know the narrator attribution is right up front too, so it's nice to be able to provide feedback and know who read what. Moving to a more technical realm, having teams, when they first start a session, match surrounding material in terms of audio. It's to take 3 to 5 minutes, listen to what's been recorded in the session ahead of yours, or in a magazine, since you can record out a sequence, sample a few of the other files in progress, see how things sound, look at their volume levels. You're looking for overall continuity within a magazine. And that investment of a few minutes at the start of your session can really pay off. Ideally, recording sessions last a maximum of 3 hours, with breaks every 30 minutes or as needed. That 3-hour figure is also what the professionals do because of vocal fatigue. That's sort of the law of diminishing returns once you've been reading, even the pros, after 2 hours or so. So smaller chunks for volunteer narrators and see how they do. But 3 hours is the typical session. Encourage monitors to also drop in basic temporary markers within the context of magazine articles that'll eventually visually show up in your DTB creation tool. Articles themselves, if they're set apart by the temporary files or the gaps in audio, are more obvious to identify, but sections, recipes, poems, elements within articles, it's helpful to have those temporary markers. And I'm not talking about creating the full nav point at that point, just a temporary marker that's going to visibly show up when we actually create the DTB later. Reinforce that rich multi-level navigation in magazines, reinforce this with your volunteers. It helps to bring audio readers in closer parity with the print reader experience. Having a rich navigational structure makes just more ease of movement through a magazine. Level 1 articles, of course, are crucial, but the secondary and possibly tertiary elements of navigation can further enhance the whole reader experience. It's very helpful to place markers allowing direct access to all of those recipes within an article of Southern Living, to all of those hotel and restaurant items at level two within the Best of the World article in National Geographic Traveler. We have pretty quick visual reference to that, so it's nice to have it in terms of being able to cue to it with a nav point. Another tip, make corrections part of your volunteer's regular recording routine. Once an article is recorded, send it to the in-house review team or reviewers as soon as possible. That way the finalized version of the article will be ready for the master WAV file that's going to be made a DTB. Moving over to actually an equipment tip, and I thought this was a very interesting one provided by a studio. When outfitting or upgrading multiple recording rooms, if you're lucky enough to have multiple recording rooms, make sure that workstations, their specs, the sound cards, the digital interfaces you purchase, microphones, peripherals, all match. It helps preserve the audio continuity for a bigger ensemble production in particular that involves many moving parts. Naturally, this is also going to help your book recordings and the continuity there, since they're all going to sound like they came from the same place. In the same vein, have recording teams record their corrections. If they're going back, volunteer monitor and narrator going back a week or two later to record a few corrections, have them go back to the original recording room that they did the main track in. Again, in the interest of audio continuity, from article to article or from session to session within an article or within a chapter of a book. Once the full audio master wave is complete, we highly recommend using NLS's time-tested naming convention for magazines, base file name. In a nutshell, this is written all lowercase with the components of the magazine title separated by a dash, followed by an underscore, followed by the numeric year, followed by a dash, followed by the two-digit numeric month. For example, all lowercase popular-science underscore 2017-01, January Pop Science. This is something that, well, I have to say this approach really works. It's the standard for BARD. It's been codified in NLS specs for some time. But I go back far enough when before things were codified in NLS specs, where I had a whole variety of naming conventions for magazine files. I was working with the Cincinnati, which, you know, not semi-organized chaos. So I take a lot of comfort and a lot of, organizational pride in adopting the NLS naming convention. So really encourage that if you haven't already. I can help you with it. So moving along to post-production, again, these are a few tips from your peers. Once the bulk of the magazine is done, there are a few responsibilities. And as weird as it sounds for magazines, it's great to record the table of contents very, very last. Perhaps some of you, you know, are familiar with this. With books, might not be as important. With magazines, it is, because it has to reflect the chronological order of the articles in print and accurately supply the reading times for each article. It's better to determine those once the body of the magazine is recorded. Those reading times are rounded to the nearest minute, by the way. And unique to magazines, a bit different than books, is that it's good to ignore the print table of contents because sometimes they're not present at all in magazines. In other cases, it's just more of a highlight best of, or the features and departments are separated on different pages and different, you know, typographical elements. So it's important to ignore the print table of contents and script your own audio contents. And each contents listing must include the article title, the starting page number, and the reading time. And it's perfectly fine to add more descriptive information to each listing, culling from the print table of contents, if there's some useful information that you'd like to add to that. But more of a bare-bones script in terms of, you know, when you open a book table of contents, you really know exactly what's coming, what page, what the chapter's name. You're following that lead for in creating the audio table of contents for a magazine and disregarding, in many cases, the print table of contents. Another tip is to, a post-production tip, is to double-check, and it seems mundane, but double-check all details of the opening and closing announcements. Does the copyright info that the narrator is saying match the print copy? Once in a while, and I've experienced this too, like, I look with horror that the copyright holder has changed. In a magazine I've been reviewing for years, and you have to, you know, reflect the updated copyright information. So have, on a routine basis, your teams check the copyright info on the masthead page or wherever it's hidden in the print copy, and make sure that their announcement scripts update accordingly. The same applies to the publisher information that's usually housed in the closing announcement for magazines. Publisher name and street address, that can change. In the end, also, does the the approximate reading time for the magazine, which for the entire issue, we round to the nearest 5 minutes. We want it within 15 minutes of DTB total time. Does that match or is it way off? So it's just something good to check what the narrator is saying versus the end product. And one of the things I do when I review everything, and I typically use Hindenburg and a little bit of SoundForge for the review process, is good to do one last front-to-back scan of the magazine's audio to ensure it's complete. So you've got the opening and closing announcements checked. Did all the magazines make it on board? Having that temporary file name with the page ranges and everything, just have all that double-checked. Once in a while, a magazine or a component of a magazine won't make the final edit, and I've had to request correction a few times. It's rare, but it happens. And bear in mind that in many cases, a single individual is taking care of the final assembly of the audio master. And ideally, they will serve as the last check to ensure completeness and proper chronology of articles. They'll be the one ensuring that page numbers and reading time citations all agree. They'll also verify audio quality and continuity. So at that point, the very end of checking your master audio, if there are any mistakes or irregularities are identified, that's the final great time to fix them. And then once the audio master is finalized, off it goes to become a DTB. And here are a few words on creating DTBs. I keep up with this myself and use Hindenburg these days. I was LCM user for many years. So here's just a really quick overview of my workflow. The nice thing about Hindenburg is you can have a lot of different workflows. It's a very forgiving program and compared to others that are out there. So typical glance, that's if I'm making a DTB from scratch, and it's also reflective of my review process, is to open the magazine from starting from scratch or naming it. In other cases, opening a magazine from a template. In either case, coming up with the updated name, which I use, that base file name. Immediately save it to a target folder. Even before really putting any content in the magazine, you know it's properly named and saved to where you want it to be saved, and all of your goodies that you add to it are going to show up in the right place. I next, and there again, no real set rules to the order of things. The next thing I do when using Hindenburg is the metadata entry from the pull-down file menu to the properties tab, which I helped design with Philip Carbo. This is going to differ a little bit from tool to tool, BookWizard versus Hindenburg versus LCM. But think of metadata as the basic summary information for the magazine, which makes tracking and working with the DTB easier. I won't get into all the components of magazine metadata, but NLS specification 1204 for contractor magazines outlines everything. And if you aspire to add more and more metadata to your magazines, that's great. The crucial things, of course, are the title and date, and also the UID, the Universal Identifier, that's known as DC Identifier, which in magazines is written US, NLS, DM for digital magazines, hyphen in between each of those. And then the final hyphen leading into the base file name. Again, I know there's a lot of technical stuff coming at you. It'll be on the wiki next week, all the crucial details here. So if you're frantically taking notes, spare yourself the writer's cramp. The next process in using Hindenburg, again, opened, named, established the target folder, entered the metadata. Next, I'm importing the final audio master that we spent so much time polishing and having all the teams involved with. Once that's imported into Hindenburg, it shows up in what's called the narration view workspace. That's where you apply the markup, going through with the print copy, making sure that all the hierarchical relationships are across the level one articles, components within articles, making sure that every heading, every article title, section title, caption, recipe, is correctly written, and that the audio clip and the text entry, the nav label components of the nav point, agree and match and are taking you where you need to go, and again, are the correct hierarchy. And at the very end, again, I can't emphasize it enough, go back to start the beginning and double check your work. I don't know how many times I've had a misspelling or a missed word or an inaccurate class attribute assigned, and like, oh, that's, you know, a section, it really should be an article, which would throw off the considerable bottom part of the magazine. Once everything checks out okay, in Hindenburg exporting as an NLS DTB, boy, they make the process so easy these days. We're literally a pull-down tab if you're familiar with it. A couple of minutes later, based on the size of your project, you've got the no DRM folder appearing in your target folder. That is the unencrypted DTB. It's very similar to what you experience with BookWizard if you use that. It generates a no DRM folder. You need to go in and rename that. And what I typically do, of course, is the base file name. Popular-science underscore 2017-01 dot DTB. there's your unencrypted DTB. Used to be no DRM, now it's named with the base file name and the appropriate extension. That is the copy that takes on encryption. You would very simply drag the newly named DTB over the NLS encrypt batch file tool and add a P to that newly created file. That's the one that's going to go out into the world. That's the one you share with everybody, not the encrypted version. When I'm sending a magazine to NLS, the encrypted version goes into their archives. The protected version is what's shared with the world. And now, we've reached the end. And I hope that I've outlined some real advantages to considering a magazine for your program, how magazines can define your state library's identity, how they can engage more patrons, reach underserved demographics, provide more choice for overserved demographics, can increase traffic and foster loyalty, especially as patrons become more tech-savvy. Magazines can disrupt the usual routine in your studio and put more volunteers to work with a wider array of tasks. Magazines can energize your volunteers by providing ample training opportunities and playing up to their unique interests, expertise, and backgrounds. I also hope I provided a few practical tips about the production and quality control process for magazines, all of which can make your book production seem a lot easier. That's it. Let me know how I can assist you going forward. I'm happy to conduct reviews of your material or provide ongoing DBC consultation, for example, help with narrator auditions and the like. So let me know. I look forward to hearing from many of you. And now we do have about 3 or 4 minutes. I'd like to hear questions, comments, any shared wisdom, certainly welcome. Oh yeah, the roving microphone.
Hi, thank you. I am excited now about possibly doing a magazine. Cool. But one magazine that has been requested that we are thinking about considering possibly doing is Make Magazine, which requires a lot of image and diagram description. Mm. And I was kind of thinking that there are different ways to go about that. You get the same narrator and train them, or you find an image describer, or you find a subject specialist. Do you know or have thoughts about that kind of volunteer training or what should go into that?
A lot of cases, I mean, those are tackled on a case-by-case basis. That's the short, simple answer. I guess I'd love to see a sample of that magazine to let you know. In terms of sort of outside expertise or an outside voice for that, you could certainly do that. With magazines, you have a bit more flexibility. I don't have a quick answer for you. I can look into that. That's a great, great question. There are cases where if something is so visually dependent, and be forewarned about this, that that's just added to the exclusions in an opening announcement. Like, there's just not going to be an efficient, clear, descriptive way to handle it. I'm not advising cop-outs on that level, but I'll look into that more. Jill, that's a great question. And I'm glad to hear you're considering a magazine. Hi, Carrie.
To follow up on that question, in Nevada, when we were recording Nevada Magazine, we did have pertinent visual things in articles. And what we did is, a volunteer can do it, but I usually did it, and it's you just begin narrator's note, you type it all out, and then end narrator's note, tape it to that page, mm-hmm. and then just flip it back out. And they would read it where it fell in the text, and it worked out very well.
Arizona.
Good advice.
That.
Yeah. When it comes to elements like that, there is not really any one set answer. It really is, are you reading a pie graph? I got a question from Insight the other day that's on a future issue of Smithsonian that's coming up that described two different train journeys, and it had a visual timeline superimposed with every stop, like 100 different stops going backward and forward. And they did come up with a really logical way of scripting it. I won't get into all the detail, but it took some back and forth and some work and a lot of extra work just for this one 2-page article. But good question. Any others or experiences you want to share?
Hi, Chris.
Hi there.
Maybe you're not the right person to answer this question, but I'll ask it anyway. We have a patron that gets QST, okay. And I get emails from him that are somewhat harsh because the QST magazine comes out in Bard about a month after it's issued in print, and the May one is coming out a little bit earlier than that, but do you have some idea why that is?
It just takes longer. The overall production process, everything from the print issue arriving and I can really only speak more in the volunteer world too, it's going to be that much longer than a professionally produced magazine. I think QST, I'm not sure which studio does it, but I would imagine that's under contract with NLS. And so that's as bummer as it is to hear that someone's complaining about that time frame. They are actually held, you know, very strictly to honor their contract to a time frame to produce that magazine. Volunteers have a little bit more leeway. Things in the QA program, we, you know, scooch into a pretty decent era of timeliness. But yeah, I think it's unavoidable, unfortunately, with just the time it takes to transpose print into audio. That Southern Living example I provided, 6 weeks for a complex magazine with a lot of moving parts and a lot of people, is fairly realistic for that title. A pro studio that has people in all day that can trade off and have a deadline or they don't get paid is a different story. So I hope that answers it. It's kind of a non-answer, but paints a more vivid picture of things. So, yeah, I guess keep on fending off the tough emails. Practice diplomacy. I'm sure you have. Anyone else? Hey, Mark.
I was just wondering what the process is for verification in the check for redundancy. Like, let's say Pittsburgh wanted to adopt Pittsburgh Magazine.
Mm-hmm.
Would we first check Voyager to make sure nobody else is doing it?
Oh, good
and
idea.
File an intention notice.
You could.
Picks.
That'd be great. Yeah. Or contact me. I can try to run down those questions as well.
Then,
I know that's come up with books over the years. Yeah. It's been a tough area.
And then let's say our staffing or our budget changes and we need to divorce from that adoption.
Mm-hmm.
That's possible, right? You're not married to it for life.
Oh, right. That's okay. You know, we're happy to get it. It's an elective process for sure to get involved.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
We come after you at home now. Anyone else? Before closing comments.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Sure, thank you.